Good morning. Our speaker this morning is Carla Moore. She is no stranger to this congregation. She and John worked with the McCarty Student Center in conjunction with this congregation from 1986 to 1994. And so she is a very familiar face. Right now, she and John are working with the congregation in Dripping Springs. They've been there since 2001. Carla is a wonderful lady. She is a big encouragement to me. She has three good boys, one of which we're privileged to have here with us as he attends Texas State. Whenever I ask for biographies from the speakers so I could do our little biography bulletin board out there, she sent hers, and at the end she put, "I'm going to be a mother-in-law," and she had a little smiley face behind that. And I know they're very excited about having Aaron Daltrey marry into their family, but the blessing goes both ways. So I won't take up any more time this morning. Come speak to us.
Good morning. I like this stand. It's like a computer desk, sort of. Our topic this morning is called Confronting Culture and Teaching Young Women About Purity. And, you know, a lot of preachers like to start off with a joke, and so I asked John on the way this morning, do you have a joke about purity? And there just weren't any that came to mind, so we'll just all have a good laugh about nothing and move right along, because I couldn't think of anything funny. The only thing I could think of was a couple of years ago watching maybe some of y'all watch American Idol occasionally. It's most of the time fairly family-friendly, except for Bikini Girl last year, which I hated that, but one of the contestants said something about a 9-year-old boy kissing some little girl, and Ryan Seacrest, the host, came on and said, "Now, remember, young kids, kissing is not for children." And we all immediately turned and looked at Micah, and he looked at us and he goes, "But Mom, I'm 10. So I guess it's okay when you're 10, but not when you're 9. But I would submit that no, it's not okay when you're 10. And I made no bones about telling him that either. Now, like Sean Kay said, I don't have daughters. I have three boys. So, you know, that maybe could be said that I don't know anything about teaching young women about purity. And in some ways, maybe having boys only gives me a unique perspective on teaching young women about purity. I see a lot of mothers here who have only girls. Y'all have four. I mean, there's several families here that just have girls. And maybe it just means that I don't know anything, you know, about how difficult it is to raise a daughter. But I have had some opportunities during camps every year and during different activities that we've had at our home and churches to speak to young women about this. And I think that having boys myself maybe gives me a different perspective about what this subject means. We spend a week at camp every year, and I'm a counselor with the high school girls, and that's a wealth of information right there. So many good and bad things I've seen with regard to this subject when it comes to purity. We've taken part in a lot of purity days. We've called them purity days, just for lack of a better term. We've had several girls' nights at our home where girls came and we talked about this, because it's just something that we need to do. We need to do more of talking to our girls about this subject. And in a setting where they feel comfortable with other girls their age, you know, we usually cut it off, start at about 7th grade and go through high school, because I think college girls would be better off doing their own thing without younger girls. I've had young women who've confided in me about this subject and having struggles and issues with it. And I have to be honest that I haven't always been successful in helping them to deal with it. You know, it depends on the person. In some ways I've helped them and didn't know, but there have been some failures there. So I've seen some good and bad things, and I'm sure most of you have as well. But I really like the way that Wayne termed this talk today, confronting culture. I like that. We're confronting culture, which is what we as Christians should be doing, is confronting culture. It implies that there's a battle going on, and there is a very, very strong battle going on in this area. You can't turn the TV on. You can't walk outside. You can't do just about anything without noticing that there's a struggle and a battle going on for the purity and for the minds of our girls and boys, too. There's probably some mama bears in here, and I'm one of them. And I will physically harm someone that tries to hurt one of my kids. Any of y'all out there like that? Yeah, mom's hands go up. But why is it in a topic like this or in a subject like this, we tend to not be quite as vigilant, or we might ignore some things that we might not ordinarily ignore that might not seem to be quite so overt? Sometimes this is a little bit, it sneaks in under the radar. But it helps me sometimes to, when things confront me, when sin confronts me, to view it as a battle and whether or not I'm going to win or lose. And is this something that I'm going to let Satan win? Is it something that the world is going to gain control over my children? It also, this term implies that we're not afraid to stand up to culture. And I'm encouraged personally because I see a lot more these days people, not necessarily just members of the church, but people who believe in God, taking a stand and not afraid to say and to confront things that are going on in the world. And that's encouraging to me. Well, what does culture tell us about purity? And I like to have audience feedback, so any comments that you'd like to make, just hold up your hand or shout at me, and I'll be glad to hear what you have to say. What about TV? What are some common, what is the TV show that maybe some teenage girls like to watch that you think of? What? Sorry. I didn't hear it. Grey's Anatomy? I've never seen that. What else? The Hills, I've heard of that one. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. You think of anything else? 16 and Pregnant. That's very eye-opening, isn't it? Gossip Girl. Now, that's the one that I thought of. I don't know why this one came to my mind, but I've seen the books, and one time when I was preparing for something like this, I picked up one of the books at Goodwill and didn't get two pages into the book before I had to put it down. And what this show is about is snobby and materialistic and promiscuous girls with no parental involvement, or maybe if their parents are involved, they're clueless. You know, we see that a lot of times where parents just really don't know what they're talking about. That's how TV portrays this. What about movies? The one that came to my mind was a fairly innocuous movie that we saw recently called Bride Wars. It was cute. You know, it was enjoyable. The thing that stuck out to me, though, was that the two brides were already living with their fiancés, and it was just one of those things that's expected. It just seems to be culturally accepted, not just accepted, but expected, that these young women are going to live with the men before they marry them. Books, you know, Twilight comes to mind, and I've read these, and they're fairly innocent, but even the main characters, even though they don't... they're not sexually involved, it's not because it's wrong. The reasons for their not being sexually involved are different. It's not because they believe it's wrong. There are expectations out there too. What do you think that our culture expects from kids when it comes to sexual purity? Are there any? No expectations, except maybe they're just going to do it anyway, right? We have low expectations in our culture, I believe, for sexual purity. On college campuses, you know, we're living here in this town, you're living in the middle of a college campus, and there's a woman named Wendy Shallot. She wrote a book called A Return to Modesty. And she says that on college campuses, sex is as casual as two airplanes refueling. And I think that probably some of y'all that are on the college campus might say that this is true, wouldn't you, perhaps? And typically, sex is based on attraction with no implication of any lasting attachment. Teenage sex, there's a study from Guttmacher Institute. 46% of all 15 to 19-year-olds have had sex. By age 19, 70% of all unmarried teens have had sex. I find that pretty staggering myself. 70% of 19-year-olds have been sexually involved. And then there's parents, and we've run into this ourselves. There are parents who just accept that sexual activity is inevitable regarding our kids, and I wonder if we think about our daughter's boyfriend. Does their parents, his parents, think that it's inevitable? And so if your daughter is over at this boy's house, what are the parents going to be thinking? It's something we need to think about, I believe. What does God say about purity? He's our ultimate authority. We need to find out what God has to say about purity. 1 Timothy 4:12. We could probably all recite this. Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, and in purity. So, you know, we tend sometimes, those of us who are older, we may tend to look down on youth in the sense that, oh, they're going to be loud, or they're going to be messy, they're going to be noisy, they're going to do the wrong thing. But Paul's telling Timothy here, don't let anyone look down on your youth, but you be an example. There are young people out there who are examples and who are inspirations to those of us who are a little bit older. Philippians 4:8. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things. This is what God says about purity. What does God have to say about sexuality? 1 Thessalonians 4, verses 3 through 8. For this is the will of God, even your sanctification, that you should abstain from fornication, which is sexual impurity or immorality, that every one of you should know how to possess his vessel or your body in sanctification and honor. Or another way of saying that is in a way that is holy and honorable, not in the lust of concupiscence, or another way of saying passion of lust, even as the Gentiles, which know not God, that no man go beyond and defraud his brother in any matter, because that the Lord is the avenger of such. As we also have forewarned you and testified, for God hath not called us to uncleanness, but to holiness. He therefore that despiseth not man, but God, who also hath given unto us his Holy Spirit. Sometimes it's discouraging when the world despises us for the things that we teach, but they're not despising us. They're turning their backs on God. It's a little difficult sometimes to not feel as though we're disliked or hated, or maybe some other word would be better, but it's God that they're turning their back on. Some of Adam's very first recorded words, Genesis 2:24, this is what God says about the marriage relationship. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. This is right after Eve was made, and this is what Adam said of her. What else does God say about sexual purity? 1 Corinthians 6:18 through 20 says, flee fornication. Every sin that a man doeth is without the body, but he that committeth fornication sinneth against his own body. What? Know you not that your temple is the body, that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit which is in you, which ye have of God, and you're not your own. You are bought with a price. Therefore glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's. We've got to teach our girls that their bodies are not their own. We hear this all the time from TV, from news, women that are out there marching and saying, it's my body, I'll do with it what I like. But no, it is not your body. You belong to God. I belong to God. Galatians 5:19-21 talks about the works of the flesh, and of the first four deal with sexual sins, adultery, fornication, uncleanness, and lasciviousness. And one last thing, 1 Corinthians 6:13, the body is not for fornication, but for the Lord, and the Lord for the body. Well, the world, the devil's trying desperately to convince us that the opposite is true, that the norm is for us to be sexually involved when we're not married, or with other people besides who we're married to. And God is, we're in a battle for our children's, our daughters' souls, and that's what we want to talk about this morning. What can we, as Christian mothers, do to confront what culture is trying to do to our daughters? And I think the key is to participate. There's just one word, is to participate in our daughters' lives and in our children's lives, if you have sons as well. To participate, what does it mean? To take part in, to share. It's kind of one of those, duh. You know, we all know what it means to participate. But Josh McDowell has written some good books regarding teens, and he has said that rules without a relationship equals rebellion. You think about that. If you do not have a relationship with your child, but you put rules before him, typically they're going to rebel. So it's very important to establish and to develop a relationship with your girls. Find out what they enjoy. You know, I've got boys, so football and basketball, those are the things that I find out that they enjoy, hunting. But girls, I'm not sure. What do girls enjoy doing? What are things that you can enjoy doing with your girls? Shopping? Pedicures? Talking? Just enjoying being together. But I think it would be fun, and I enjoy Erin. I'm looking forward to having another girl in the family besides me. But do we really, truly participate in our children's lives? Culture, again, tells us that it takes a village to raise a child, or it takes a daycare to raise a child, or it takes a school system to raise a child, or maybe a babysitter, a play date. But I want to be the one, and I want my husband to be the one that raises our children. Obviously, I need help, and I'm so thankful to have the church and my parents and John's parents to help us raise our kids. But God entrusted me with three boys, and I want to do the best, and I know that all of you that have daughters want to do the best that you can with what God has blessed you with. But how should we participate in our child's life? And I wanted to focus on three different ways today. First of all, participate in their relationship with God. And then participate in their relationship with their friends. And then finally, participate in their relationship with their boyfriend or their boy friends. So first of all, let's talk about how we can participate with our daughters in our daughter's relationship with God. This is the most important one, and I think that everything else hinges on this. That you can, if you help participate and develop your child, your daughter's relationship with God, then the other areas will fall into place much easier. All of the rest of the relationships for the rest of her life will hinge upon her relationship with God. You're the one who will introduce your daughter to God. He knows her because he formed her. But I like to think of it as you're holding hands with God and with your daughter, and you're the one who introduced her to him. And what she will learn about him will come from you and from your husband. So be careful and be cautious and teach her about God. Deuteronomy 6, verses 4 through 9, some of the best parenting advice out there. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thine heart and with all thy soul and with all thy might. And these words, which I command thee this day, shall be in thine heart. And thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up, and thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thine hand, and they shall be as frontlets between thine eyes. And thou shalt write them upon the posts of thy house and on the gates. Sounds important, doesn't it? Very much a part of every part of your day, morning, noon, and night, we're to be teaching our children. And then later on in that chapter, in verse 24, the Lord commanded us to do all these statutes, to fear the Lord our God for our good always. There's always a reason for God's commands. We might not always understand them right off, but we always know that it's for our good always, that he might preserve us alive as it is this day. This important relationship with God needs to start as early as possible. And I'll never forget Betty O'Bannon teaching the boys in this little room back here before it was expanded. There was a little nursery class, and I would sit, you know, and help her sometimes. And she'd pull out a little Bible for each of the kids, and she would, I just remember her saying, hold the Bible and pat the Bible and kiss the Bible. And she taught them respect for the Bible. And we always knew that it wasn't Betty's responsibility to raise our boys, to teach our boys, but she was instrumental in beginning early, helping us to begin early and teaching them. And I'm sure there's many of you in this audience who've benefited from that as well. She helped us. So there are ways and there are people that will help you in this area of teaching your children, developing her relationship with God. Now, how else will they know about God's love without having the benefit of our love to them? And having the model of our own love. And I almost think that fathers are more important than mothers in this relationship. And some of you may disagree with me, but I've seen a lot of girls who have not had a father's love. And what do they typically do? If any of y'all run into this, what happens? Girls without a father's love and affection and attention tend to go looking for a boy who's going to give that to her. And so those of you girls who aren't married yet, choose your husband wisely, because your husband's going to be so instrumental in raising, helping you to raise good children. Something I think it's important to think about, too, is that we can't assume that every girl out there understands the unconditional love of God. I don't think I understood this until I was a little bit older, because I had a dad and a mom that loved me, and I never questioned that. I never never felt like I was unloved, but there are a lot of young women out there who do not know unconditional love. And it's heartbreaking when you think about it. And so I think we need to not forget that not all girls understand this, so we have to teach this to some. And to some, love is only physical, because that's the only way that they're guaranteed a response from a young man. But we need to teach them that love is more than that, and dads need to be responsive to their girls. I think that we need to think about also, if our daughters mirror our relationship with God, then what is their relationship going to be like with Him? Is it going to be like ours? Is it shallow? Is it uncommitted? Maybe hypocritical? Half-hearted? Or is it going to be wholehearted? Because typically, we're going to have a lot to do with the type of relationship that our daughters have with God, because she watches how we are. Without a relationship with God, why is a girl going to care whether or not she's pure? She may not want to disappoint you for a while, but later on, it's not going to matter. If she doesn't respect God, love God, it's not going to matter to her that she remain pure. There's no reason. So it's very important, I believe, to participate. I know it is, to participate in your daughter's relationship, teaching them about God. It is also important to participate in their relationship with friends. I've seen this in our boys, too. We need to encourage or make it easy for them to develop good friends. And how can you make it easy for your child to have a good friend? Y'all can help me out with this one. Allow the friends in your home. Sometimes, especially when they're boys and they're dirty and stinky and messy and bringing frogs in and mice, dead mice, things like that, you know, might not want to. But when it's a good kid, let them come over. Encourage that. Are there other ways you can think of? Make sure they're around good kids. And so put them in situations where there are good kids and not bad kids. Proverbs 27:17 says that iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. This is applicable in so many ways, in marriages, in friendships, whether they're young or old. If you have a young man or a young woman who's a friend of your child that's a good person, then they're going to sharpen one another rather than dull one another. I think we need to discourage bad relationships, make it hard for them to be good friends with those kids, which means, you know, it's a fine line we tread, because our children need to learn to be kind and to be friendly to all children, but we can also discourage, you know, them spending the night at someone's house that we're not comfortable with, or those children coming to our house. And I've seen it happen that they learn how to develop good relationships because we make it easy on some and hard on others. 1 Corinthians 15:33, do not be deceived. Bad company ruins good morals. That's the English Standard Version. There are some friendships that your children will have that will disrupt your family harmony. And whether that, there was some that Jordan was friends with that they would gang up and pick on Jacob, and it would just ruin the whole family harmony. And so some of that obviously is going to happen anyway, but mean-spiritedness, we just didn't put up with that. We would find other friends for them to play with. We need to encourage, and really, it's not their decision, but we need to encourage them to take part in good activities. Are we going to take them to basketball camp or Bible camp? If there's a choice between the two during the same week, I believe that your priority should be what's good for them. And not only to encourage it, but to participate in it yourself, whether that means staying there for the week and helping with the camp. Don't just drop them off to everything. Participate in your children's relationship with their other friends. Then, finally, in this area, we need to participate in their relationship with boys. And those boys might not like it very much, because maybe they haven't had parents who've been involved and participated in their lives. But this is very important, especially it seems like younger and younger the girls are that are being involved and becoming involved with boys. And we cannot be hands-off in this area. We have to be very hands-on. Whether it's courting or dating or going out or going steady or going around, going together, talking, Twitter-pated, we need to participate in this relationship with boys. Likely, you know, they may not think too much about it, the boy might, but your daughter should be used to it. If you've participated in her whole life, she should be used to you taking part in all of her relationships. Now, there's a time to cut that off, I know, but I'm talking about young girls here. So some practical advice dealing with purity, we need to not be naive when it comes to this area. Even if it's a Christian boy, he's still a boy. If they're in a dark room somewhere, if they're off in another corner of the house, we can't just think to ourselves, oh, I'm sure they're playing tiddlywinks. You know, maybe they are. And I'm not saying that it's inevitable that it's going to happen, because we talked about expectations. We should have higher expectations for them. But there's no reason to be naive in this area. We need to participate. It's important to talk about purity with our young girls. We need to talk about sex. It's sometimes uncomfortable to us, and we have to use good judgment. There's no child out there that wants to hear your personal stories about this, so use good judgment. But we need to talk to them about how far is too far. They need to know these things, and who better for it to come from than you, because they're going to talk to someone about it. But if they've talked to you all of their life about good things and about Bible things, they're going to talk to you about this as well, especially if you've made it a non-taboo subject. They need to be able to talk to you about things. We need to put up roadblocks and speed bumps. And, you know, there were several things that I thought of, whether it's using the cell phone, and if they don't answer when you call them, take it back from them. They need to answer the phone. They need to not have alone time when they're young and learning and exploring these relationships. We need to check up on them. And I'm curious to know what other roadblocks and speed bumps y'all might have experienced yourselves. It's called ABCs of what? About the birds and bees. Probably has some road bumps in there for us to help, huh? Well, I don't want to embarrass Aaron, but Jordan and Aaron are engaged, and yeah, when I mean, I think that they at a certain point, I'm not going to be calling Jordan and saying, "Are you at home yet?" You know, I don't do that to him. He's in college, he's nearly 21, but I'm still participating. Aaron would agree, I'm sure, that I'm still participating, but I'm trying not to be nosy about it. Does that make sense? And I hate to embarrass you. Sorry, Aaron. That's kind of the debate a little bit between courting and dating. And that's something that I believe each parent needs to study and decide on, you know, what's best for their kids. Clara? Something for fathers and mothers to talk about and to be honest and forthright with their children about. Norman, our middle son's going to Harding this fall, and so Norman gave Jacob all of the kissing places on campus and told him that he needed to find 10 or 11 girls, and so You know, he's joking too. He knows, he's not saying that Jacob needs to run around and date all these girls, but what he's saying is what you're saying, Clara, is that they need to be sure in who they're choosing. And anyway, that's a touchy subject as far as dating rather than courting, so we won't dive into that right now. It's good for parents to talk about. So put up roadblocks for your daughters and for their boyfriends. Don't just allow them to have whatever time they want to have. You know, participate in that relationship and be there and be a presence. And, you know, let them know that you're going to be checking up on them. Now, modesty. This is a subject. You can't talk about purity without talking about modesty. And is there any more subject that's touchier than this subject? I don't think that there is. There's maybe 40 or 50 women in this room, and I think there would be 40 or 50 different opinions on exactly what constitutes a modest skirt. 5 minutes? Oh, wow. Okay. Like it or not, our clothing does say something about us. Proverbs 7:10, we read of a woman who wears the attire of a harlot. And contrast that with a woman that we read about in 1 Timothy 2:9 and 10, and she needs to be clothed in good works. Think about the difference between those two women, the woman that wears the attire of a harlot and the woman who's clothed in good works. Then the woman in Proverbs 7, she's not only immodest in her clothing, but in her actions, because it says she's loud and stubborn, and she's drawing attention to herself, and she caused him to yield. We've got to teach our daughters not to be the kind of female that's going to cause these young men to yield, and I'm praying that I am raising the kind of boys, and those of us who have boys are raising them not to yield to that, but it's going to take both of us. What does the Bible say about modesty? 1 Timothy 2:9 and 10, like men are also that women adorn themselves in modest or orderly, decent, discreet, proper, respectable apparel, with shamefacedness and sobriety, not with broided hair or gold or pearls or costly array, but which becometh women professing godliness and good works. Can we not braid our hair? That's not what it's saying. But our focus needs to be on our inner heart and not what we're wearing, not our outward appearance. So this is talking not only about dressing modestly, but acting modestly. And I found a good definition of dressing modestly. It's wearing clothes that do not arouse thoughts or actions that promote sensuality. And then acting modestly is not acting and behaving in such a way that brings attention to ourselves rather than the Christian life that we profess to live. Standards for modesty, obviously the Bible has got to be our standard. Is it okay for your knees to show or your shoulders to show? That's something that I think every parent needs to talk about and decide. I can't say, you know, obviously, again, you're known sometimes by what you wear if you're wearing the attire of a harlot. But I'm not going to decide exactly if it's an inch above the knee or an inch below the knee. That's not my job. There is a very interesting study that was done by some young men. They're twins, Alex and Brett Harris. They're not Christians. They believe in God, so they consider themselves Christians. They're not members of the church. But they wrote a book called Do Hard Things. And it's a great study, but there's a survey. They call the Modesty Survey. If you want to look it up, just Google Modesty Survey, and it'll come up. And this is what they say about it. It was not intended to serve as a scientific measurement of what the average man thinks about modesty. In the strictest sense, it isn't a survey, but a discussion between Christian guys and girls who care about modesty. Over 200 Christian girls submitted their questions. In less than 20 days, over 1,600 Christian guys, 12 and up, responded. Close to 200,000 separate pieces of data were collected, including 25,000 text responses. And it was presented in a traditional 5-point, agree strongly, disagree strongly, and they were to answer these questions. Each statement was accompanied by an optional text box for additional explanation. So, for example, one of the questions was this. Seeing an inch of skin between the bottom of a girl's shirt and her pants is a stumbling block. Well, 4% strongly disagreed with that statement. 12% disagreed with that statement. 11% were neutral, but this is interesting. 43% agreed. 28% strongly agreed. So you add that together, 71% of boys surveyed agreed that an inch of skin between a top and the top of your jeans was immodest. And this is what they say. The honest truth is this. We're not telling you what to wear. We're just telling you what we as guys have to guard against. It is God's word, your own heart, your parents, and godly friends who help you decide. Guys are just asking for help. And I think this is important. We have to teach our girls. And these are guys from the world. They're asking for help. I honestly think that we've done a not-so-great job in teaching our daughters about modesty. we tend to say, don't wear that, or pull your shirt down, or roll your shorts down. We've done a bad job just saying that and not explaining why and giving them reasons. There are principles to follow, and I'll just give you some of these, and you can look these up on your own. Matthew 5:28 talks about a man, if a man looks on a woman in his heart to lust, he's committed adultery already. We can either help or hurt these boys in the way that we dress. Philippians 4:8, what are the things that we're to think on? 2 Corinthians 10:4-5, the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but we're to bring into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. This principle is what we think on and what we reflect on is very important. We've got to not be a stumbling block to others. Luke 17:1-2, Romans 15:1-2. And we must profess holiness and godliness. 1 Peter 1:14-16. These principles need to be carefully taught to our daughters. There's a book called Set Apart. The author's name is Kent Hughes. He says, God's women must begin with their hearts, allowing God's word to search out the thoughts and intentions that influence how they dress. They must turn their attention to the beauties God values most, beauties that have little to do with clothing. And I thought that was an excellent point. Search out the thoughts and intentions, because we have intentions with what we put on our bodies. We have an intent when we wear something. What is that intent? We need to find out if it's in harmony with God. The Bible compares applying God's word to putting on clothes. Think about all these references. Ephesians 4:24 tells us to put on the new man. Ephesians 6:11, put on the whole armor of God. Colossians 3:9-10, put off the old man and put on the new man. Romans 13:12, put on the armor of light. So, you know, when you think about that, what does God want us to put on? What does he want our focus to be on? Putting on the new man, working on our heart, not what we're putting on our bodies. He wants our focus to be on clothing ourselves with good works and not intending to draw attention to ourselves, but bringing glory to God. If we instill these truths to our daughters, I think there will be more concentration on how they look spiritually to God and less on trying to be provocative or sensual towards young men. There's going to be less fighting. You will not wear that. There'll be less of that and more of their own desire to please God and not boys. At camp, spend a week there, and we have a mirror that's about this long, about that tall, and it's set, you know, here. So they can't see their whole bodies. But you can't help notice. I'm not going to judge their hearts, but sometimes you can make a righteous judgment. When the dress code is a certain way, but they're just trying to get just beyond that, you know, just barely, you know, whether it's tighter jeans or, you know, a low-cut top, whatever it is. Some of them, I believe, are trying to get that attention from the boys, and they're focused on boy attention rather than growing spiritually. But this is a symptom. And John and I were talking about on the way here, there is competition involved here, and these girls probably feel like they're competing against other girls who are willing to put forth these things. And so we need to train our young men to look for the good young women and not for those girls who are trying to compete. It's very important to talk about forgiveness with regard to sexual activity. When girls slip up and when they mess up, it's going to happen. How are we going to treat them? If they're thinking, I've already messed up, I'm just going to keep on. Or if they're thinking, God could never forgive me for what I've done, it's too hard to change. I'm just going to have to stay this way. If our girls stumble and fall, we've got to be ready to pick them up. And our response has got to be love and forgiveness. Think about the father of the prodigal son. He went out waiting to meet him. He couldn't wait to see him come home. We need to remind our daughters of Paul, what all he was responsible for doing, some heinous things. But Paul said, this one thing I do, Philippians 3, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth unto those things which are before. It's hard to forgive ourselves sometimes, isn't it? Because we want to keep pulling those things out of our past. And we try to blame ourselves. And, you know, God's already forgiven us. He's wiped the slate clean. He does not forgive the same way we do. He forgets completely, and it's marked off of our account. We need to learn how to forgive like that. The most beautiful passage, I believe, on forgiveness is Psalm 103. The Lord is merciful and gracious, slow to anger, plenteous in mercy. He will not always chide. Do we always chide our daughters? Neither will he keep his anger forever. He hath not dealt with us after our sins, nor rewarded us according to our iniquities. And he goes on to say a little further, as far as the east is from the west, so far hath he removed our transgressions from us. That's as far as you can go, from the east to the west. And then we need to forgive ourselves, too, if we feel like we haven't done a good enough job preparing our daughters. Some practical things, I would recommend Cindy Colley and her daughter did a new series. I haven't seen it yet, but it's called Pure on Purpose. I'm sure it's great. Sheila Butt has Everyday Princesses. It's a video. There's a video series out there from Pam Stenzel. She is a Catholic, but she speaks to youth groups around the country. She is the product of rape. Her mother was raped, and she's the product of rape, but she goes around talking about how sex has a price tag. It's a good series to show to your kids. Josh McDowell, there's a book from Shannon Etheridge called Every Young Woman's Battle. These things are practical and good. And then real quick, I have to bring this up because it took a retired Austin police detective, my mother and father-in-law, a Jamaican preacher, to bring this today because I left it at home and they brought it to me. But this is something we've done in girls' days when we've had them. We've prepared these little bags for them, and we put things in there to help them remember. It's a ring pop to remember the ring that someday they'll have from a young man. Kleenexes to remind them not to do the things that might cause them to shed tears. We have a fast break candy bar to remind them when you are in a situation when you feel like things are getting out of control, make a fast break. There's a pure white cotton ball that helps them to remember purity. We have a little pin that we've used. It's just a safety pin. It has red and clear beads. Red to remind them of the blood that Jesus shed for them, and clear or white to remind them of how we want the condition of their heart to be. And they've used this as a zipper pull, things like that. Then if they need a reason to remain pure. And then something we've used, we've given these girls these little books, and we'll write things on the front or in the pages. The man I marry will be. And we ask them to fill those things out because it's good for them to think about the man that they will marry. My wedding day will be. What will their wedding day be like? I will prepare myself for marriage by, and we leave it blank and they fill that out. I want to be the kind of wife who my honeymoon will be. You know, some of these things are really good for them to think about, especially if they're very visual, to have this. It's like a journal that they can write in and that they can remind themselves of important things. We've also taken, you can go to Goodwill and buy an inexpensive wedding dress and hang it up at camp when you're talking about these things to remind them. It's very visual. There's different scenarios you can talk about. Anyway, there's so many practical things you can do, and so many of you, I'm sure, are much more creative thinkers than I am, and I'd like to hear your ideas.